The Empire is always interested in improving its stock or learning better ways to control or discipline it. We're talking about psychological conditioning, genetic tinkering, and every kind of mental or physical torture you can think of. Some of it works, much of it doesn't. But there are always more warm bodies to work with. Sometimes the Empire works changes on them in the name of scientific inquiry. There are monsters in Silo 9.
And Worm Boy?
He runs Silo 9. He was human once. Now he's become something else, though whether it's more or less than human depends on who you talk to. He has artificially augmented Esper abilities far beyond anything that's ever arisen naturally. He makes the prison the hell it is and enjoys every moment of it. The suffering and despair of others makes him strong. It's because of him that no one ever leaves Worm Boy Hell alive.
Finley shook his head slowly.
I never knew any of this.
You never asked. As long as there were more clones and espers for you to use up as you chose, you never questioned the system that produced them.
All right. I'm sorry. There are a lot of questions I never asked. But I'm asking now. I want to know. Has anyone ever tried to break into this place before?
No one that's lived to tell of it. Silo 9 has state-of-the-art security, always. We've never been able to get past it before, but this could be the break we've been praying for. There's a lot of us who'd give our lives and die happy for a chance to bring down Worm Boy Hell.
Finley looked at her steadily.
You've lost someone to Silo 9, haven't you? Someone close.
Yes. We all have. She was my friend before I was a clone, and after. She helped brief me on taking over as Evangeline. The only person I could ever really talk to. They came for her in the early hours of the morning, and I never saw her again. Daddy tried to find out what happened to her for fear she'd talk, but even he couldn't get answers about what happens to people inside Worm Boy Hell.
Evangeline fell silent, and Finley couldn't think of anything to say. They looked across at Hood, who was talking persuasively again.
I've managed to infiltrate some of my own people into the incoming security forces, and I've convinced some of the braver cyber-rats to run a jamming storm to coincide with our attack. They'll run interference while we get our people out and keep security from calling for outside help.
All right, said the Hog. We're convinced. Set things in motion. We'll spread word throughout the Esper network. You organize the clone forces. We'll begin our attack on Silo 9 in 1 hour from now. Get moving!
Hood nodded quickly with his empty cowl, turned away without acknowledging Evangeline and Finley, and strode quickly out of the chamber. Finley looked at Evangeline.
This is all happening a bit fast for me. You're really going to launch an attack on a maximum security prison, just on that man's word?
Of course. We trust Hood. We've been given good reason to in the past. And we've had plans for an attack for years, ready to take advantage of any opportunity that arose. We've dreamed of this for a long time, Finley. A lot of blood debts are going to be settled today.
But what if it all goes wrong?
Then it goes wrong. We can't miss out on a chance like this. It might not come again for decades. You can't conceive what it's like in that hellhole, Finley. None of us can.
That's not strictly true,
said the abstract pattern. Looking at it too closely made Finley's head ache, so he looked at it sideways and concentrated on the voice as it continued.
We have contact with one of our people in Silo 9. She volunteered to be captured and sent there. We spent some time preparing her so that she would appear to break under their interrogation, but still keep the deepest part of herself free and separate. We can listen in, but we can't speak to her. She knew she was almost certainly going to her death, but she still volunteered, just on the chance that we might be able to make use of her. She was ready to wait for years, if need be. Have you ever cared about anything that strongly in your life, Finley Campbell?
I put my life on the line every time I entered the arena, but that was just for me. I never cared about anyone except me, until I met Evangeline. And And then, I only cared about us. Maybe that's changing now. I don't know. I'm still coming to terms with everything. I can't really understand what life has been like for you.
They let us show you.
And their thoughts swept over Finley's mind like an irresistible tide of blinding light. He was torn away in a rush of thoughts and images, and all he could do was go along with it. He could feel Evangeline's presence beside him in the churning maelstrom, and that comforted him. He stopped trying to fight it, and allowed the Esper leaders to take him where they would. He listened, and after a while, thoughts came to him that were not his own. Jenny Psycho wasn't her real name, but she had to give that up when she went undercover. She lost a great deal more when the Empire threw her into Wormboy Hell, but she somehow held on to her real name and kept it safe. One last secret hidden deep inside her, but her torturers couldn't find it. Not even Wormboy himself. To them, she was still Jenny Psycho, captured terrorist. Just as the Esper leaders had planned, though she'd forgotten that. She'd forgotten a lot of things. It was the only way to survive. She lay curled in a ball, naked and shivering, on the bare concrete floor of her cell. There was no furniture or any other luxury. Just four bare stone walls surrounding a space maybe twice the size of an average coffin, with a ceiling so low she couldn't stand upright without stooping. They dropped her in, sealed the lid shut, laughed, and then left her alone in the darkness. They dropped food and water in through a sliding vent in the ceiling, but no one ever talked to her. Except Worm Boy. She used to scream a lot, but all that got her was a sore throat, so she stopped. She used to talk to herself, but she ran out of things to say. She smelt bad. The stench in her cell rose and fell just enough to keep her from getting used to it. She suspected that was deliberate. It was the sort of thing Wormboy would do. They caught her easily. It seemed to her there was a reason for that, but she'd forgotten it. As a low-level Esper, it had been her job to mentally test and examine babies developing in the womb to discover whether they had any trace of Esp in them. If they did, they were either aborted or taken away at birth to begin a lifetime of training and conditioning, depending on whether it was a useful kind of Esp, of course. The mothers all looked at her with the same controlled desperation, and she gave them all the same brief, meaningless smile. And for a long time, she just did her job, doing as she was told, as she'd been trained. But constant exposure to so many bright, innocent, unsullied minds was finally too much for her. She began using her talents to conceal the baby's Esp. It wasn't difficult. The Esper abilities would still appear in later life, but at least that way they had a chance at a safe, normal, free life. Security found out. She hadn't tried that hard to conceal it. Defiance, perhaps. Or maybe some last trace of her own conditioning. Or something else that she'd forgotten. Either way, they caught her. And now here she was, alone in the dark, with a worm in her head, down in Wormboy Hell. Light began seeping into her cell from somewhere, a sickly yellow light that made her think of disease and decay. And there in the cell with her, crawling out of the shadows in splashes of bloody amniotic fluid, came the babies. Bald and pudgy, with barely formed arms and legs, they crawled over and around her, a living carpet of unforgiving flesh. Unfinished fetuses squirmed spasmodically on the concrete floor, trying to squeeze in between her and the floor, as though trying to crawl back into the wombs from which they'd been prematurely torn. She wanted to love them all, poor blameless innocents. But she knew what was coming next. They came from Worm Boy. Teeth appeared in all the babies' mouths, sharp, jagged teeth thrusting up through torn, bloody gums. And slowly, deliberately, they began to eat her alive. Jenny always swore that this time she wouldn't scream, but she always did in the end. Teeth ripped at her flesh as she screamed and screamed, and blood ran down to pool thickly on the floor. As the pain and the horror mounted, pudgy fingers began to pry at her squeezed shut eyelids to get at the eyes beneath. And even though she knew none of it was real, Ginny Psycho screamed and screamed until her throat was raw. Worm Boy did so like his little games, and mind games were the best fun of all. Fat and wide and greasy like a slug, genetically engineered to never sleep or waver in his duty, Worm Boy filled an entire auditorium from wall to wall, vast acres of pale, faintly luminescent flesh that rippled and folded in upon itself. His bulk covered all the floor, and his huge, distorted head pressed against the ceiling. Long tubes entered his body here and there, providing nourishment and removing wastes. He could never have eaten enough to satisfy his enormous appetite. His body's needs were taken care of by the authorities so that his mind could roam free across the prison. Worm Boy's parents had been normal enough humans, but he had been designed and tampered with from the embryo onward to shape the mind and talents of the perfect jailer. He ran everything, from the computers that ran Silo 9 security, to the guards who enforced his edicts, to the little pets that gave him access to every prisoner's mind. Every time someone was damned to Worm Boy Hell, for whatever reason, a small, genetically designed and imperially patented parasite was surgically implanted in their brain. Worm Boy's worms. They blocked off the Esper's power so they couldn't use them offensively, and secreted various useful chemicals that helped to keep the Espers and clones quiet and malleable. And if by some chance an Esper or a clone did find the strength of will to fight off the chemicals and try to escape, the worm would fry their brain. The worms gave him all the control he needed, and were much cheaper and easier to run than hundreds of individual S-blockers. Their designer won a major award before he disappeared into Silo 9 to ensure he never told anyone else his secrets. Worm Boy liked to go among the monsters, the malformed, horrid results of Esper and clone experimentation. Too dangerous ever to be released, too useful to kill, they roared and spat in their cells, clawing at the stone walls. Human no longer, but more than beasts, wild and awful and beyond pain or fear. They defied even Worm Boy's best efforts. He never gave up on them. He swept back and forth among the specially reinforced cells, walking up and down in their minds. And they screamed and howled with a rage that shook the walls. To them, he was just one more monster among many. Worm Boy laughed and laughed and laughed. His mind roamed free among the prisoners of Silo 9, present in every mind controlled by a worm. A slimy mental caress, a passing presence like a chill wind from a charnel house. Bringer of nightmares, vast and awful. Horrid and merciless god of his own private hell. Finley Campbell lay curled in a ball on the floor of the abandoned workstation, shaking and shuddering. Evangeline knelt beside him, her hands cool on his feverish face, murmuring calm and soothing words. He felt sick, tainted, and invaded on every level of his mind and body. Worm Boy's thoughts had ripped through his mind like poisoned barbed wire, brushing aside all his defenses as he shared everything that happened to Ginny Psycho. Neither of them had known he was there, but that just made him feel even more helpless, unable to help Ginny or any of the other victims of Worm Boy's rape. Finley snarled his killer's death's head grin, his hands clenched into fists. He would find the monster in its lair and kill it. And maybe then he'd feel clean again. He ran through the calming chants he'd learned in the arena, and gradually the shaking stopped. Control slipped over him again like a cool, familiar cloak, and he sat up. Evangeline hovered over him worriedly, but he managed a small smile for her.
It's all right, Evie. I'm back. I swear to you, I never knew any of this. I never heard of Silo 9, or Worm Boy, or the terrible things they're doing there. If Parliament and the Company of Lords knew about this...
Many of them already do, unofficially. They don't care. Or if they do, they manage not to think about it. Clones and Espers aren't people, remember? We're property. The Empire made us so it can do whatever it wants with us.
But if the people knew, if we told them, made them understand...
You wouldn't be allowed to tell them. The production of clones and espers is too important to too many people. Stop the trade and millionaires would become paupers overnight. And what would happen to the Empire, dependent on espers for its smooth running at all levels? The Empire has a vested interest in preserving the status quo at all costs. Why do you think they spend so much time and effort in portraying the Underground as ruthless terrorists? I'm sorry, Finley. This is all new to you, but we've lived with it all our lives.
I won't allow this to continue. It's wrong. It's obscene. It's against everything we're taught to believe and honor. The families are supposed to protect their people against such abuses. Guard them against horrors like this.
Even clones and espers?
You were right.
They are people, too.
Evangeline smiled.
Welcome to our rebellion, Finley. The attack on Silo 9 will be starting soon. Will you be joining us?
Finley smiled back at her, and his eyes were cold as death.
Try and stop me.
Which was how he came to be padding down a narrow technician's access tunnel, gun in one hand, sword in the other, leading a small army of rebels through the interconnecting guts of the Undercity. Evangeline was there at his side, a large gun looking out of place in her small, delicate hand. He had no doubt she would use it, though. She'd been there in Jenny Psycho's mind, too. Just the thought was enough to make Finley's hands tighten around his sword and gun. He had vowed upon his name and honor to find and free Jenny, or die trying. Finley glanced about him, but there were only the bare, polished walls of the tunnel and a ceiling so low he had to walk hunched over to avoid banging his head. There was darkness before his party, and darkness behind them, as the 50 or so men and women moved in a blaze of sourceless light, a bright golden glow generated by the minds of the Espers. Finley hadn't known Espers could do that, but he had a feeling there were lots of things he didn't know about Espers. He'd begun to suspect that when early on one of the Esper leaders had looked at him, and suddenly Finley had a map in his head of the long, convoluted way that would lead him into Silo 9. The map was still there, clear and distinct, though he'd never been this way before. It also told him he wasn't far from the first of the prison's outer defenses. The 50 or so men and women with him, he kept getting a different answer every time he counted, because some of them weren't always there, seemed to be making a lot of noise, but Evangeline had assured him they were all telepathically shielded from detection, while cyber rats were running interference on the tech security systems. The rebels were invisible for all intents and purposes, until they began their attack, by which time they should be deep in the diseased heart of Worm Boy Hell, and it would be far too late to try and stop them then. Hood strode along on Finley's other side, calm and confident. There was still no trace of any face in his cowl, which frankly spooked the hell out of Finley, but Evangeline trusted Hood, so Finley went along with it. Certainly the man showed no sign of fear or hesitation, despite the odds they'd be facing. Finley approved of that. Among all the things a warrior needed, a cool head in a dangerous situation was right at the top. The three Stevie Blues were striding arrogantly together some way ahead at the edge of the light, on point, in perfect step with each other, fearsome sights in their leathern chains, like young savage furies on their way to demand vengeance. Finley would have been a little more impressed by them if he hadn't been so sure they were complete and utter psychopaths, though that was probably just the kind of troops you needed on your side when you were playing Follow the Leader into Hell. There were other groups of rebels, following other routes, heading for openings in the prison's security system that Hood's people had arranged. But there was no way of knowing how they were getting on. All forms of communication, tech or telepathy, were too open to interception. Hood's plan relied on a series of lightning strikes from a dozen different directions to get in, kill Worm Boy, rescue the prisoners, and get the hell out before major security reinforcements could arrive to spoil the party. Publicly, Finley approved of the plan. It had the virtue of being uncomplicated, at least. Privately, however, he couldn't help remembering his tutor's oft-repeated dictum that plans rarely survived contact with the enemy. Once the fighting started, everything tended to go to hell in a hurry. Hood seemed confident there wouldn't be much actual conflict, given the rebels' advantage of surprise. Finley wished he felt that confident, too. The three Stevie Blues came to a sudden simultaneous halt, lifting their guns and peering suspiciously into the gloom ahead. Stevie One looked back as the rest of the party came to a halt. At least, Finley thought it was Stevie One.
There's a door here that isn't on the map. It's big and solid and very definitely locked. Should I blast it?
Not on your life. We're right on the edge of the prison itself, if the rest of the map can be trusted. A disruptor blast would set off every alarm in the place, and the cyber rats can only cover so much. Hood, it's your map and your plan. What do we do?
There's no problem. My people are waiting on the other side. They'll open the door.
He strode forward and rapped twice on the steel door. It slid upward, and lights blazed into the access tunnel, revealing an army of armed guards in the room beyond. Hood laughed and blinked out of existence.
It's a trap! Everyone back! Hood's betrayed us!
And as quickly as that, everything went to hell. There was a clamor of raised voices in the narrow corridor, with shouts and screams and a confused mess of orders and naked panic. Those at the rear turned to run, but a heavy steel door slammed down from the ceiling, cutting off their escape.
So much for telepathic invisibility,
thought Finley. He grabbed Evangeline by the arm and pulled her behind him, putting his body between her and the armed guards ahead. He just had time to wonder why they weren't firing yet, and why they were wearing masks, when thick clouds of evil-smelling gas burst out into the corridor from concealed vents in the floor. The first breath was enough to set unprotected rebels coughing and choking. Finley tried to back away, but there was nowhere to go. And then, a sudden wind roared through the corridor, forcing the gas back upon the guards and dispersing it as fast as it could form. The hidden vents exploded in showers of sparks and collapsed in upon themselves, closing off the gas. Esper power crackled on the air like harnessed lightning, so thick and close that even a normal like Finley could feel it. The guards realized the gas attack wasn't working and turned their guns on the rebels. Finley raised his arm automatically, slapping at the bracelet on his wrist to activate his force shield. The roar of energy beams was deafening in the confined space, joined with the screams of the dying and the injured as rebels fell. There was the stench of burning flesh and melting metal as energy beams tore through bodies and ricocheted off the reinforced steel walls.
They knew we were coming this way. They've got us trapped in a killing field.
Finley picked a target almost without thinking and shot a guard in the head. The top of the man's skull exploded in a shower of boiled blood and brains, and the guards around him fell back, shouting with shock and disgust. They hadn't expected any resistance. Finley grinned savagely. When in doubt, do the unexpected. He ran forward, brandishing his sword, yelling for the others to follow him, and no one was more surprised than him when they did. Evangeline was there beside him, yelling her clan's war cry and holding a sword like she knew what to do with it. The surviving Espers and clones were right behind them, firing guns if they had them, and Esper power thundered among the guards. Swords clashed on swords as the two forces slammed together, and the guards tried to make a stand. But even savagely depleted by the unexpected ambush, the rebels were still more than a match for the guards. The Stevie Blues stood together, the same grim expression on the same faces, as fire roared from their hands. Guards dropped their swords and ran screaming as their clothes and hair burst into flames. Espers picked up guards with their minds and slammed them together with deadly force. Blood flew on the air. Bones cracked and skulls collapsed under the implacable mental pressure. And some guards just stood and stared with horror-filled eyes as telepaths ripped through their thoughts with tides of fear and depression and self-loathing. Eventually, Finley looked round for another target and found there were no more left. Guards lay scattered across the floor of the chamber in awkward, blood-soaked poses, like broken dolls thrown aside by a bored child. Only rebels were still standing, looking confusedly about them. And it nearly broke Finley's heart to see how few of them there were. Out of the 50 or so who'd accompanied him into Worm Boy Hell, only 19 remained, and 3 of them were Stevie Blues. He took a deep breath, turned off his foreshield, and flicked drops of blood from his sword. Someone would have to take charge, and it looked like it was going to have to be him. He had no real authority, but he'd spent enough time in the arena to know that sometimes confidence is everything.
All right, listen to me. You can bet there are more guards on the way here, armed to the teeth, even as I speak. We have to form a perimeter. Anyone with Esp, find a corridor opening and guard it. Everyone else, grab a gun. Anyone you see coming this way is almost certainly an enemy, so shoot on sight. If you kill the wrong person by accident, we can always apologize later. Now move it!
The Stevie Blues and a handful of others nodded unresistingly and hurried off. Finley turned to Evangeline. There was a smear of someone else's blood on one cheek, and she was staring dumbly about her at the heaped piles of the dead. There was more blood spattered across her clothes, some of it hers. Finley took her by the arm and made her turn around to face him.
Don't blank out on me now, Evie. I need to know what you know. How many other groups of us were there in this assault?
5.
Evangeline swallowed hard and visibly tried to pull herself together.
Can we contact them? See if they were ambushed too?
They were,
said a quiet voice beside them. It was a short, slightly overweight man with wide eyes and an open face. He might have looked like an accountant if it hadn't been for the sword he held in a businesslike manner and the blood that soaked his sleeve to the elbow.
I'm a telepath. Denny Pindar. I heard most of them die.
Then we're on our own. I say the mission is officially aborted, and I further say we get the hell out of here.
No! If we just turn and run, then the others died for nothing.
If we try to take on overwhelming odds in enemy territory for no good reason, we'll die for nothing.
No good reason? You swore a death oath to bring this place down, Finley Campbell. Is your word worth so little?
Damn. I was hoping you'd forgotten that. You're right, as usual. But what can we do with just a handful of people we've got left?
Find Worm Boy and kill him. He holds this place together. Without him, it'll fall apart into chaos. We'll be able to free the prisoners and fight our way out of here.
Great plan. Have we got time to right our wheels first? All right. Let's look at the situation. Pindar, can you detect any hidden cameras or surveillance equipment here?
The Esper concentrated, then pointed at a wall decoration that looked just like all the others. Stevie One looked back briefly from guarding her corridor opening, and the decoration burst into flames. Finley nodded his thanks.
Evie, can we contact the cyber rats? They might know more about what's going on.
No, it was set up so that they could reach us, but not the other way round. Their comm units are specially shielded. Ours aren't.
Then we'll just have to follow the map and hope it's not part of the trap, too.
A thought struck him, and he looked at Pindar.
How come they didn't use S-blockers against us? We'd have been dead in the water if they had.
The telepath shook his head.
There are no S-blockers inside Silo 9. They'd interfere with Wormboy's control. Security must have been banking on the gas and their superiority in numbers to make the difference. It did with the other groups. They never had a chance to defend themselves. If you hadn't taken the initiative away from them by rallying us to strike first, we'd have just stood there and died like the others. We're not used to combat.
He broke off, his eyes suddenly far away.
Company's coming.
Finley looked automatically to the Stevie Blues.
Can you see anyone?
You won't see them. They're shielded. They're battle espers.
Oh, shit. We're dead.
Finley glared at Evangeline.
We're not dead till I say we are. So they're battle espers. So what? We'll just stay out of their way.
We can't. They're coming from all directions.
Finley glared at him.
Don't you ever have anything positive to say? Can we fight them?
These are espers specially trained and conditioned by the Empire to fight other espers. We can't talk to them or reason with them, and they don't accept surrenders. They just kill and kill till there's no one left alive but them.
There's got to be a way to beat them. There's got to be a way. What about you, Pindar? Could you use your esp to fight them?
If I had to.
The telepath blinked owlishly.
But they're much more powerful than any of us. And there's a lot more of them than there are of us.
They'll only outnumber us if we stand here and wait for them. So we'll go to them. God, I wish I felt as confident as I sound. Pindar, which of the approaching forces is the smallest?
The Esper thought for a moment, and then pointed at one of the corridor openings.
That way. 24 Espers, moving ahead of the main pack. No guards.
Then that's the way we're going. Stevie Blues, lead the way. Fry anything that moves.
Sounds good to me. Right.
The three Esper clones set off down the corridor at a steady trot, conserving their breath. The chains on their leathers clattered loudly, like an angry chorus. Finley hurried after them, Pindar and Evangeline on each side of him, and the rest of the party brought up the rear.